Deuteronomy 32, we want to keep in mind that this is a song that this nation Israel is going to sing, and the truth that is in it, that they are going to sing this. It's God said to Moses that it was going to be a witness against them. And in studying on into the chapter, the Gentiles are even spoken of in this song, which I'm thankful for that, since we're all Gentiles here tonight. We'll begin reading with the 10th verse. He found him desert land, and in the waste howling wilderness. He led him about, he instructed him, he kept him as the apple of his eye. As an eagle stirreth up her nest, fluttereth over her young, spreadeth abroad her wings, taketh them, beareth them on her wings. So the Lord alone did lead him, and there was no strange God with him. He made him ride on the high places of the earth, that he might eat the increase of the fields. And he made him to suck honey out of the rock, and oil out of the flinty rock, butter of kind and milk of sheep, with fat of lambs and rams of the breed of Bashan, and goats with the fat of kidneys of wheat. And now didst drink the pure blood of the grape. But Jeshurun waxed fat and kicked. Thou art waxen fat, thou art grown thick, thou art covered with fatness. Then he forsook God, which made him, and lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation. In verses 10 to 12, we see the condition in which God found Israel. As well, we see the fatherly care that he bestowed upon this nation. This nation was his, and he cared for them as their father, because he was their father. In verse 10, God found him in a desert land, and in the waste howling wilderness. This is where the nation Israel was found. God found them, or they existed in Egypt. And this was when, in Genesis 46, and Mom will be getting to this in the studies in Genesis, but let's look at Genesis 46 and the 26th and 27th verse. This is when this nation of Israel was born. Genesis 46, verses 26 and 27. All the souls that came with Jacob into Egypt, which came out of his loins, besides Jacob's sons' wives, all the souls were 66. And the sons of Joseph, which were born him in Egypt, were 2 souls. All the souls of the house of Jacob, which came into Egypt, were 70. 70 souls. That was the birth of the nation Israel. Then over in Exodus 1, we see how the nation grew. Started out with 70 souls, and Exodus 1 will begin with the 5th verse. And all the souls that came out of the loins of Jacob were 70 souls. For Joseph was in Egypt already. And Joseph died, and all his brethren, and all that generation. And the children of Israel were fruitful, and increased abundantly, and multiplied, and waxed exceeding mighty, and the land was filled with them. Remember in the Exodus, when they left Egypt, there was over 2 million of them. From 70 souls to over 2 million, I would say the Lord made them very fruitful. Back over in Deuteronomy, he found them in a desert land, waste, howling wilderness. They all speak of Egypt, a desert land, as well as a waste, howling wilderness. And we want to remember that Egypt is a type of the world. In the word desert, they were found in the desert. This has the thought of barrenness. Any one of us that's been to a desert, it's barren. And that's exactly what the world is to a child of God. There is nothing in this world for the Son of God. Absolutely nothing. Howling here has the thought of yelling or howling beasts. I would like to turn to Psalms 49 and the 20th verse. Keep in mind what Egypt is a type of. And this is where God found this nation, these 70 souls. As Mom has been bringing out on Wednesday night, Yes, those brothers sold Joseph down into Egypt, but God had a purpose in having that done so that he could preserve them, a posterity. That's where that nation began. Psalm 49:20. Man that is in honor and understandeth not is like the beasts that perish. This howling, which has the thought of yelling or howling beasts, this is man without the Lord. And what is found in Egypt? These men, or these beasts, they make lots of noise because they want to be noticed. That's what's found in the world. Men that aren't saved, men that want to be noticed, they make a lot of noise. And this is where the Lord found this nation, is down in a place like that. Now this word wilderness, we know they went through the wilderness for 40 years. It was a barren place. This word wilderness has the thought of a desolate waste, a thought of waste and a desert, nothing of any use or profit. And again, in the world, there is nothing for the Christian. There is nothing. If there is, then they're not walking in the life that has been placed within them. They're not allowing that life of Christ to live through them. If they found something in the world that they like, that's because they're living in their flesh, their old creation. In verse 10, he found this nation in a desert land and in the waste howling wilderness. He led him about. This led here means that he compassed them about, or he surrounded them. And didn't God do this with the nation Israel? There in Egypt, protected him, compassed, he surrounded them. Let's look at Psalm 32 and the 7th verse. Psalm 32:7, Thou art my hiding place. Thou shalt preserve me from trouble. Thou shalt compass me about with songs of deliverance. Selah. I think of the song, unto thee I flee to hide me. He compasses us about. Then he led them about, or he surrounded them. Then he instructed him. God instructed this nation. In the Hebrew, this means he took care, or he cared for this nation. Let's look at Exodus 13 in connection with the fact that God led this nation. He surrounded them. Exodus 13, and I would like to read the 18th verse. But God led the people about through the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. Notice he led the people about through the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. And the children of Israel went up, girded out of the land of Egypt. Let's look at chapter 14, beginning with verse 18. And remember, this is Jehovah. This is our Father that led this nation out of Egypt. Exodus 14 will begin with the 18th verse. And the Egyptians, this is when they were at the Red Sea, and the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gotten me honor upon Pharaoh, upon his chariots, and upon his horsemen. And the angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them. And the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. And it was a cloud and darkness to them, but it gave light by night to these, so that the one came not near the other all night. He surrounded them. He was not only in the front, but he was in the back of them. Let's look at Isaiah 52:12. Only God can do this. Isaiah 52 and the 12th verse. For ye shall not go out with haste, nor go by flight. For the Lord will go before you, and the God of Israel will be your reward. He'll go behind you. Let's look in Micah. This is in the future. In Micah, the 2nd chapter. And I'm thankful that God never changes. So we see the same thing that's going to happen for this nation, Israel, in the future. Beginning with the 12th verse, this is the gathering of the remnant. Micah 2, beginning with verse 12, I will surely assemble, O Jacob, all of thee. I will surely gather the remnant of Israel. I will put them together as the sheep of Bozrah, as the flock in the midst of their fold. They shall make great noise by reason of the multitude of men. The breaker, and this breaker is speaking of Jesus Christ, is come up before them. They have broken up and have passed through the gate and are gone out by it. And their king shall pass before them, and the Lord on the head of them. Jehovah is going to protect that nation. Yes, they're going to be disciplined, as any good father does to his children. Disciplines them, but he still loves them. Then back in Deuteronomy 32, in this 10th verse, he led him about. He instructed him. He kept him as the apple of his eye. This kept here means to guard or to protect. Jehovah himself took upon himself the care of this nation. It was his responsibility. He protected and he guarded them from everything that he knew would come across their path. He is a holy God, and the attitudes that were revealed from the hearts of this nation, he protected them from the attitudes of this nation. Those attitudes that weren't right, they had to be judged. He's a just God, and he judged them. The Lord brought to me about the contentions and the rebellions that presented themselves through that 40 years of wilderness. Korah, he intruded into the priesthood. Miriam, she thought, well, she was just as important as Moses. What did God do? Numbers 12, God gave Miriam leprosy. What did happen to Korah? God, he judged him by the earth opening up and swallowing him up. God protected that nation. They were full of unbelief, and unbelief is contagious. It's sin, that's right. Now, God protected this nation. This is the way we are the apple of his eye. We walk in the new creation. We have a metaphor here to show the extent of how protective God was of this nation, Israel. We see here that he kept him as the apple of his eye. The apple here of his eye, in the Hebrew, it means is the little man of the eye. That is the pupil in which, as in a glass, a little image of a man is seen. The pupil of your eye. The pupil of your eye is very, very important. It's what goes in and out depending on the amount of light. The pupil is in the middle of the eye, and it is through the pupil which everything seen is sent to the retina. The pupil adjusts as to the amount of light or darkness around the objects which we are looking at. Our pupil is extremely dear and cherished and must be protected. It is one of the most delicate parts of the eye. If we didn't have the pupil working right, we couldn't see things in the day, we couldn't see things at night. That pupil is very, very important. Well, this is how God considers this nation of Israel to him. It's as the apple of his eye. It's extremely dear and precious and cherished to his heart. Let's go back to Deuteronomy 7 again and read verses 6 to 8. This is how God felt about this nation. He is their father. This was his desire for them. Deuteronomy 7, verses 6 to 8. For thou art an holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself above all people that are upon the face of the earth. The Lord did not set his love upon you, nor choose you because you were more in number than any people. Remember, they started out with 70 people, for ye were the fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you, and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers, hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand, and redeemed you out of the hand of bondmen, from the hand of Pharaoh, He chose to set his love upon this particular nation, and no other nation is precious to God's heart. Israel is his nation. She is his very life. Let's look at Psalm 17 and the 8th verse. Psalm 17 and the 8th verse, David says, "Keep me as the apple or the pupil of the eye. Hide me under the shadow of thy wings." Let's look at Proverbs 7. Proverbs 7, and we'll read verses 1 and 2. "My son, keep my words. Lay up my commandments with thee. Keep my commandments for my word and live, and my law for my word as the apple of thine eye." Let's look at Jeremiah 12, speaking of the remnant here. Jeremiah 12 and the 14th verse. "Thus saith the Lord against all mine evil neighbors that touch the inheritance which I have caused my people Israel to inherit. Behold, I will pluck them out of their land and pluck out the house of Judah from among them." Now I'd like to turn to Zechariah 2. Zechariah 2 and the 8th verse. "For thus saith the Lord of hosts, Jehovah de Sabaoth, after the glory hath he sent me unto the nations which spoiled you. For he that toucheth you toucheth the apple of his eye. For behold, I will shake mine hand upon them, and they shall be a spoil to their servants. And ye shall know that the Lord of hosts." So we see here the loving care that Jehovah has for this nation Israel. Then in verse 11, we have another instance showing how much love Jehovah has for this nation Israel. Another example. God's loving care for Israel is likened to the tender affection that is shown by the mother eagle toward its young when she teaches them to fly. "As an eagle stirreth up her nest." This stirreth, here it means to arouse, to incite, to rouse to action or attention. This mother eagle, she stirs up her nest, that is, her young ones, to fly. She wants them to fly. She stirs up the nest. "Come on, we're going to fly." The mother eagle excites them, her eaglets, in teaching them to fly, and afterwards she guards them with the greatest care. She teaches them to fly, and in Sister Bodie's pamphlet of the Eagle Saints, it amazed me, this mother eagle actually boots them out of the nest to make them to fly, but yet she's there to catch them if they don't know how to, if they can't quite flying down pat. She's there to catch them. Then she fluttereth over her young. This mother eagle encourages them to use their wings by fluttering, by hovering above them. She shows them how to do this. She flutters her wings. She shows them how it's done. Then she spreadeth abroad her wings. She expands her wings out. So if one of the eaglets can't quite fly, she catches them and she carries them. She taketh them and then she bears them on her wings or her pinions, which are feathers. She loves them. She knows that it takes time to learn how to fly. She doesn't get impatient with them. She shows them. She excites them to want to fly. Then she boots them out of the nest. Then they try to fly and she shows them how. But if they can't do it, she's there to catch them. Let's look at Exodus 19:4. The Lord uses this term, Exodus 19:4. This is when they arrived at Sinai, and in verse 3, "And Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain, saying, Thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, Ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself." Here, this is a symbol of Jehovah delivering Israel out of Egypt. The Lord is seen as the aggressor in the work of Israel's redemption. He took them out of Egypt, and he carried them through the Red Sea on their way to the Promised Land. Jehovah, as the great eagle, swooped down and gathered them out of Egypt. the land of bondage. He bore them upon his wings, even as the eagles do their offspring. In Sister Bodie's pamphlet, The Eagle and the Eagle Saints, she talked about this very verse here in Deuteronomy 11 and 12. She says, Here the view is that of the mother eagle in the training of her young. She is seen as teaching them to fly. They are thrown out of their nest where they have been so comfortable and are forced to use their wings, or they will be dashed to pieces on the hard ground. Realizing their danger, they make the effort. But the lesson is not learned in a day. It is repeated again and again until they have mastered the art of flying and soar far up in the sky, carried abreast upon the wind, even as their parents. Then she goes on to say, this is all typical and wonderful. It applies to the Lord and his training manners with his children. He stirs up their nest, forcing them out of the baby stage of ease and comfort by allowing trouble to come their way. He disciplines them in the school of affliction, teaching them in various ways to use their wings of faith and rise and soar high above the danger zone. They are thus made strong. They grow in courage, zeal, and knowledge, even as do the eaglets. And thus they prove their kinship to the Lord himself, the great eagle. For the offspring of the eagle, this is a very good article. I like the fact that the eagle is a solitary bird. We fly alone. We fly as individuals. We can't drag anyone else with us. It's all individual between us and the Lord. We may desire it for somebody else, and we may want it really, really bad. But when it comes right down to it, him and me, an individual walk. And I've got a note here that that's Jesus, the Son of God, the Heavenly One. In verse 2, we see Jesus as a shepherd to this nation Israel. So the Lord alone did lead him, and there was no strange God with him. I like this. This word alone means solitary. The Lord works with each of us as individuals. Solitarily with each of us. We can't do a work in somebody else's life, though we may pray, though we may want it more than life itself. We cannot do the work. It's the Lord alone did lead him. And this word lead means to guide. It's only the Lord that guides us. No one else does this. And I like this, and there was no strange God with him. God did not need any help. I think of these people that think that they, you know, they need to help God out. Well, how in the world did God create the world without their help? How did God get anything done before he created man? God is quite capable. The Lord alone didn't lack any power to guide this nation. Let's look at Exodus 13. The thing I like about it, they knew he was leading them. It was evident that he was leading them, as we're going to read here in Exodus 13, verses 21 and 22. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light to go by day and night. He took not away the pillar of the cloud by day, nor the pillar of fire by night from before the people. He was there. His presence was there, and they knew it because they could see the cloud in the day. They could see the fire at night. There was no excuse for not knowing that God himself was leading them. Let's turn to Nehemiah 9. I like the way that Nehemiah put this, and it is so, so real. The Lord not only solitarily leaded and guided them, but again, we want to notice the care that he took. In verse 19, Nehemiah 19:9, and notice, 9:19. Yet thou in thy manifold mercies forsookest them not in the wilderness. The pillar of cloud departed not from them by day to lead them in the way, neither the pillar of fire by night to show them light, and the way wherein they should go. Thou gavest also thy good spirit to instruct them, and withheldest not thy manna from their mouth, and gavest them water for their thirst. Yea, 40 years didst thou sustain them in the wilderness, so that they lacked nothing. Their clothes waxed not old, and their feet swelled not. How did he take care of this nation? It just amazes me. When you read, yet thou in thy manifold mercies, remember the different times that God said, Moses, I'm going to do away with this nation, and I'm going to make a nation of you. But yet, God, Moses interceded, yet thou in thy manifold mercy. God knew the heart of every one of these that he was guiding through the wilderness. And look at the way he took care of them. Talk about faithfulness. He was faithful in every aspect of their life. They lacked nothing, so that they lacked, yea, 40 years did thou sustain them in the wilderness, so that they lacked nothing. Do we lack anything? No. The Lord provides our every need. He's as faithful to us as he was to this nation that he guided through the wilderness. Never once did they lack anything. Yes, they murmured a lot. Yes, they thought they wanted this, that, and the other thing. And the Lord gave it to them so that it became a stench in their nostrils. But they never lacked any necessary item. In verse 13 and 14, this is looking forward to the time Israel would actually possess Canaan and experience the goodness of the Lord in this rich land of Canaan. He made him ride on the high places of the earth, that he might eat the increase of the fields. And he made him to suck honey out of the rock, and oil, this is olive oil, out of the flinty rock, butter of kind and milk of sheep, with fat of lambs and rams of the breed of Bashan, and goats with the fat of kidneys of wheat, and thou didst drink the pure blood of the grape. Notice how God provided for them. He didn't just give them run-of-the-mill items when they got to Canaan. They got the best that was in Canaan. God provided them with the best. This ride on high places is a figure of speech denoting the triumphant, undisputed possession of Canaan. God went before them. He took care of all those ites. He defeated those ites. They went in and they possessed the land. In this 13th verse, we see how the Lord provided the best of the land of Canaan, simply for them to enjoy. He gave everything that they needed, the best of the land. They didn't have to do anything for it, but just take it. The best of the produce, this increase that he might eat, the produce of the cultivated field. And he made him to suck honey. He made those bees make those hives in the clefts of the rock so that they would have plenty of honey. This is olive oil out of the flinty rock. The olive trees would grow out of the side of the mountains because they didn't require a lot of water. And that's where they got their oil from the olive oil that was very necessary in their way of life. Those olive trees would grow where otherwise fruit-growing trees couldn't grow. Then in verse 14, the Lord didn't stop there in verse 13. The Lord gave them the best, the butter of kind, the milk of sheep. And notice, they're not limited. He gave them, this is what he gave them, with the well-fattened and well-fed lambs. These rams of the breed of Bashan. Bashan was known as having the best cattle in the area, well-fattened, great meat, and goats. Notice, remember how many people that went in and possessed the land. The Lord had to provide for all of those. With the fat of kidneys of wheat. The fat of kidneys of wheat, this is the finest of the wheat. I would like to look at Psalm 147, 14. Psalm 147:14 says, He maketh peace in thy borders and filleth thee with the finest of the wheat. This word finest here, it means the choicest or the richest. And this fat of kidneys of wheat is a term from the Levitical offerings. The fat around the kidneys was the choicest of the fat which was burned upon the burnt altar unto God. As this fat burned, it ascended a sweet savor unto God. Let's look at Leviticus 1:8. You'll read many times through the Levitical offerings in Leviticus of how necessary that the fat meant to God, that it spoke of the devotedness. It spoke of Christ's devotedness to his Father. Leviticus 1:8, and this is regarding the burnt offering, and you can find regarding each of the other offerings in regards to the fat. And the priests, Aaron's sons, shall lay the parts, the head and the fat, in order upon the wood that is on the fire, which is upon the altar. We also see this in Exodus 29:13, when Moses gave the instructions for the priesthood. Exodus 29 and the 13th verse. And thou shalt take all the fat that covereth the inwards, and the caul that is above the liver, and the two kidneys, and the fat that is upon them, and burn them upon the altar. The Lord our Father enjoyed the smell of that fat that ascended unto him. I had a thought in one of these references that fat results from eating. And that's a thought I had to think on for a little bit. But as we take in the word and let it become a part of us, that's where the fat comes. Let's look at Isaiah 58. Yes, we learn to be devoted unto our Father. And this is what he does. Isaiah 58:11. We want to be spiritually fat. And the Lord shall guide thee continually, satisfy thy soul in drought, and make fat thy bones. This fat means spiritually vigorous or prepared for battle. And that the only way that our bones can be made fat is by eating this word. That's the only thing that's going to make us prepared for battle. Is this word. Now, what God provided for them, as I looked over these two verses, they didn't have want of anything. He provided everything that they needed for their daily sustenance. Why? Because he loved them. He gave them the best. Let's look at John 3:16. He not only gave the best to that nation, Israel, but he also gave us the best. John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his best, gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. And as I was thinking what he provided for that nation of Israel in the land of Canaan, he gave. Mom gave this out when she gave the lesson in John 3 in Sunday school. She said seven things about God's love, and I can see this in relation to Israel. He loved them. The magnitude of his love, he so loved them. The scope of his love was that nation Israel. The nature of his love, he gave. He didn't ask for anything back. He gave to that nation Israel. His love was of sacrificial character. He gave that nation the best. He gave them the best. And that's what he gives us. And he gave us. He gave us Jesus when he cared enough to send the very best. In verse 15, but Jeshurun waxed fat and kicked. Thou art waxen fat. Thou art grown thick. Thou art covered with fatness. Then he forsook God, which made him, and lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation. Keep in mind what Jehovah did for this nation, what he gave them, what he provided for them, what he wanted to be to them, what he was to them. This Jeshurun, Jackson's has the meaning of the righteous one, to be righteous. This name of Jeshurun designates Israel under its ideal character as the upright one. But here, this name or this title is used in reproach of Israel because they departed from the Lord. It says, but Jeshurun waxed fat. This means that they became dull and insensible. Think of everything that the Lord gave them. Keep this in mind, what he has done for them. He redeemed them out of the hand of Pharaoh. This fat is a metaphor taken from a bull that casts off and breaks the yoke. This is what Israel did. They didn't want to be in yoke with the Lord. But Jeshurun waxed fat, and he kicked, or he trampled down. I would like to turn to 1 Samuel 2. We have another good example of some of those that kicked. 1 Samuel 2, and we'll begin with the 27th verse. And there came a man of God unto Eli. Eli and his sons were they were not setting a good example. They were doing opposite of what God wanted them to do. Thus saith the Lord, did I plainly appear unto the house of thy father when they were in Egypt in Pharaoh's house? And did I choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon my altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me? And did I give unto the house of thy father all the offerings made by fire of the house of Israel? Eli and his sons were of the line of Aaron. Verse 29, wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice and mine offering, which I have commanded in my habitation, and honorest thy sons above me, to make yourselves fat with the first fruits of all the offerings of Israel, my people. Wherefore the Lord God of Israel saith, I said indeed that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before me forever. But now the Lord saith, be it far from me, for them that honor me I will honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. This word kick, I think I gave it, means to be trampled down. What God had done and provided for this nation Israel was lightly esteemed. I would like to read how the Hebrew reads with this verse. But Jeshurun waxed fat and kicked. Thou didst wax fat. Thou didst grow thick or dense. Thou didst become gross. And he forsook God who made him and contemned the rock of his salvation. This forsook, and then he forsook God. This forsook means to send away, to let go. Then he forsook God, which made him, and lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation. This lightly esteemed means to account vile, to despise. In Israel's prosperity, which the Lord blessed them with, they failed to appreciate him. How many of God's people today do not appreciate what Jesus did for them? Think of a parent that has given their life for their child. When they grow up, they move out. They don't want anything more to do with their parent because they don't think what they did was right. This is how the nation Israel treated Jehovah, their father. He blessed them. He brought them out of Egypt. And yet, they didn't want him anymore. I don't want anything to do with you. He forsook, or he counted, or he sent them away. Well, how many of God's people are doing that today? Because they don't want to be separated from what the world has. I want a little bit of the world, but yet I want a little bit of what God has too. Well, we know that can't be. How quickly we forget where we've been delivered from and taken into. I thought of that song, Into, Out of and Into. Yes, wonderful, Out of and Into. How quickly we forget where we've been delivered from and what we've been taken into. Many of God's people have been taken out of Egypt. Yes, they've been redeemed, but Egypt hasn't been taken out of them. And that's sad. Think of what Jesus died for us. Jesus made it possible for us to go to glory. He expects the best. He gave us the best. God gave us the best. Jesus Christ, he wants the best out of us. He doesn't want what's left over after we've done what we wanted to out in the world. He doesn't want the leftovers. He wants off the top. He wants the tenth off the top. He wants the first fruits. I thought this was really sad. Of all that God had done for this nation, and then they turned around and they didn't appreciate any of it. That hurts my heart. I'm glad that the Lord allowed me to read this because it helps me to see how much we should appreciate Him.